So thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to present in this workshop. I will talk about radiotherapy optimization. In particular, I'll talk about modeling and the numerical techniques that might be used for such a task. And this is joint work with the Radiation Oncology Department at PMH. And I consider myself fortunate that I had the chance to collaborate with this group. So I'll give an outline of the problem, then I'll go into sort of more technical aspects of it, and I'll conclude with the numerical experiment that concurs our belief that our modeling and optimization approach might be viable in clinical setting. Okay, so some statistics about cancer. Well, about 40% of the whole population are estimated to develop cancer over a lifetime. And radiotherapy is one of the dominant modalities in treating cancers. So hopefully we are working on something practically relevant and important. So I'll talk about modeling and optimization within the context of external beam radiation therapy, but actually our modeling approach applies both to brachytherapy, external beam radiation therapy, and so on. So it's not quite that much dependent on the delivery mode of radiation. So one of the main premises behind radiotherapy is that cancer cells are weaker to some extent. So basically, if you radiate both healthy and cancerous cells are more likely to die. So the process of radiotherapy, external beam radiation therapy, goes as follows. The patients are usually outpatients. So person comes in every day, gets his treatment delivered within, let's say, half an hour. So person is lined up on the couch. This is the window of the linear accelerator, so radiation is delivered through here, right, through this outlet. And this, so this machine, this is a robotic arm of the linear accelerator, so it can rotate around the patient. Pause, shoot, then rotate some more, stop, shoot, and so on. So, so as I said, radiation is delivered by linear accelerator. Typically, the dose is delivered over, let's say, 4 weeks, but this is not, so this part is not that important to the dose, so I'm just giving some background. And one of the principles which is exploited in this treatment modality is that it's possible to overlay beams from different angles, so you can rotate machine, stop, shoot, rotate it some more, stop, shoot, so that at the focal point of these beams you get sort of the cumulative effect. So this is an important feature of RT radiotherapy. So our treatment planning goal is, of course, to choose beam angles, right? So where to stop the machine, and beam intensities. So throughout my talk, I'll use words beam and beamlet interchangeably. So whenever you hear beamlet, don't worry about this, it's a beam, okay? So our goal is to choose these two things so that we deliver enough energy to kill the tumor, yet we spare all the healthy tissues around the tumor. The process of RT treatment goes typically as follows. First, a certain imaging modality is attained, such as CT scan. So this is a horizontal slice of the prostate cancer patient through, let's say roughly through here. Okay, so we just took two-dimensional image of the patient. Anyway. Then the physician comes in and identifies critical structures, or structures of importance. So basically, this is just a grayscale image, right? Somebody has to tell you what to treat, what not to treat, and so on. So this is called delineation or segmentation. So here, this would be the femurs, the legs of the bones of the legs, roughly. This is the prostate, the area you want to irradiate in this case. Okay. So after the delineation takes place, one formulates some quantitative model of the treatment delivery and attempts to find a good plan. So I'm putting good plan in quotes, as I will explain what does it mean. At least what does it mean to a physician and to a planner that the treatment plan is good. Okay. So how do we figure out how much dose is delivered, first of all, to the patient? So here, one more thing I depicted here is this. So this vertical line, it's a deposition of a photon beam. If your linear accelerator was at the top, and let's say shot with unit intensity, you would start to deposit energy. throughout the patient, as you go in, the energy level kind of drops down because you already put some energy up here, and brighter colors depict sort of higher energy level. So note that the beams in intensity modulated radiotherapy, the beams can be very narrow, so you can deliver those with very high precision. So you're sort of inserting these needles into a patient, and in the intersection you can get the cumulative effect. So in the next, I will spend some time just describing how one can figure out how much dose is actually delivered to a patient. So after we take this segmentation information, so we just care about the structures, right? We don't need the grayscale picture anymore. So this picture is again same patient, and let's say we put the linear accelerator at the top. Right? So what's done is first there is a process of discretization. The whole treatment volume or the patient volume is split up into small cubes, into small volume elements. So here we're looking at two-dimensional picture, right? So just small squares. And it is assumed that if this cube is small enough, every cell in such a cube will receive the same amount of radiation, right? So we're doing the discretization, then what is left is to take care of these cubes. So we assume that the dose described by the dose values in each of these cubes. And so we discretize the patient, and it's a standard step in many engineering applications and physics and so on. So after discretization, right, so we can turn our accelerator on and off, right? So we deposit some energy throughout. What else can we do? So imagine we put a small dial next to the accelerator and we just vary the voltage, right? So this is called intensity. We call it W. We denote it with W as weight, right? And as we vary intensity, right, your beam sort of deposits more or less radiation as we go along. And so consequently, the dose to any given element of this grid, right, D sub V. So I'm going to index this voxels by V, right? So this will be D sub 1, D sub 2, D sub 3, and so on. Doesn't matter how I enumerate them. So D to any voxel can be computed as just the scaling of some dosimetric parameter delta. And so nice thing that these deltas can be pre-computed, so they go in as the parameters of your model. You can compute how much energy is deposited to every voxel with this unit intensity of the beam, and then all you need to do is you just scale this delta. So again, delta is the parameter, W is your controls. Right? So next thing, we can superimpose these beams. We can, let's say, shoot by two orthogonal beams. At the intersection, you get much higher intensity. And actually, the relationship here is nothing but linear. Right? So we end up with this simple description of dose to voxel as a linear combination of some dosimetric parameters times our controls. Again, so we are interested in WBs. You have very, if any, control over delta. So deltas come from physics of the process. And what we can do is we can vary W's, and we're interested in certain patterns for DVs. Okay, so this might start to sound like an inverse problem. In fact, it is. So we'll talk about beam rate optimization once again. We're interested in finding beam intensities. So initially I said we want to find both the angles where to stop the machine and the intensities. But for now, say, well, we know good angles. A physician knows good angles. You don't want to, for example, blast through a bladder on the way to a prostate. So some reasonable or good angles are already predetermined usually by actual geometry. Okay? So now we'll say we just want to find our W's so that the resulting dose given by the collection of values to each of the voxels is close to ideal. And I will describe what does it mean to have ideal or a good dose. Okay, so our goal will be actually in describing this and capturing this proximity in our model. Okay, so again, so I might as well describe the whole dose received by the patient by just the collection of D sub 1, D sub 2, D sub 3, and so on. Right, so this is all okay. I have a sequence of these, and now I want to capture what does it mean to have a good sequence of these. And our these come out as a result of W's, right, so I want to find such W's that will give me good D's. Okay, so what does it mean to have a good or ideal dose? So one of the quantitative tools that is used to analyze the dose distributions to a treatment volume is the concept of the so-called dose volume histograms or dose volume distributions. So again, histogram and distribution I will use interchangeably throughout the talk. Okay. So dVH of T is a curve. Okay, so that's how I'm going to define dose volume histogram. It dVH at T gives me the percentage volume of the organ that receives dose bigger, greater or equal than T. Okay. So it is a curve, okay, of I'm going to plot the percentage on the vertical axis and the dose value on the horizontal axis. And I'm just going to go throughout, I'm going to change the energy threshold T. So continuously, I'm going to vary it from zero to the maximum dose, and I'm going to just figure out what this volume percentage is, right? So, I mean, this is definition, but for I want to give a minute for people to absorb it, okay? Because this is, I mean, this is what this talk is about, okay? So this is how kind of the proximity to a good plan is measured, and this is what gives us a quantitative tool to analyze the treatment plans. So if we go through the process of discretization, if we split the treatment volume in these cubes, equivalent to dVH of T is just roughly, it's a number of voxels, so that the dose per voxel is bigger than T, right? Okay, so to be more precise, I want to give you examples of this, those volume distributions. For example, typically for a target, we want to deliver something close to uniform dose. So we want to hit the tumor with 81 grays plus minus 1 gray to the left to the right. So to depict it, to translate the statement into the language of those volume distributions, we say, well, our target should receive a dVH like this. So this point right here means that nobody in the tumor receives dose less than 80 grays, right, if you go back to the definition. And this point here says nobody receives those than 82 grays. Okay, so again, our dose volume distributions, the histograms capture the distribution of energy to a given treatment volume. Okay. So this is the picture we would like to see for a target, for a typical target. Likewise, well, for something for healthy tissues around it, we want to get the opposite picture, right? So we want to have no dose at all, ideally, right? So this is the picture like this. Unfortunately, it is sort of almost never possible because of the proximity of the healthy tissues to the tumor. So we have to make a sacrifice. Eventually, this curve is going to kind of pull into this non-negative orthon. And what's done practically is that one says, okay, I'll be fine as long as my curve sits below some collection of critical points, okay, and points like this have circumstantially they exhibit, let's say they have some clinical meaning. Let's say points on this critical points on this curve will correspond to let's say acceptable levels of toxicity. But if you go above this points, if your dose distribution will climb above this points, means you're delivering higher dose to bigger volumes, which will result in a risky treatment plan, right? So your plan can damage the patient to the extent that you cannot treat this patient any longer with radiation. Okay, so we want to control our curves to stay below these points for healthy tissues, and so these points come from the clinical knowledge. Okay, so I'll start with a simple question. Can we account for such a requirement? I want to be below one given point in a nice, well, can I specify somehow mathematically, can I specify that a given curve lies below a point like this, right? So again, the curve is described in terms of dVs, right? There's a collection of dVs, let's say d1, d2, d3 to d100. What kind of conditions should I impose on dVs to get a picture like this? So my curve never enters the shaded area. Well, so the answer, I mean, to this existential question is yes, yeah, we can do it. The downside of it, we need to introduce binary variables. Okay, and if you sort of ever dealt with any numerical algorithms or optimization, then you might know that, well, dealing with things that are discrete in nature might be not so good in terms of numerics. Okay. So, well, here a constraint like this can be captured using the simple system of inequalities. So what we say is, we're going to say, well, the maximum dose to any voxel in the organ is equal to m. Okay, so by physical capacities of the accelerator, you say, I cannot hit the voxel with more than 1,000 grays. So there is always this m. So I can write an equality like this. I'm going to say dose to a voxel is less or equal my threshold t. This is the value I'm interested in. Plus whatever is left to reach m times the indicator. So I sub v will basically paint all the voxels black or white. So this inequality will force I sub v to be equal to 1 as long as dose to this voxel exceeds the threshold. So as long as you say you pass 10 grays, the voxel is painted black. Right, and the next constraint, I'm just counting the number of black voxels. Right. So I mean, it's the modeling is simple here, but again, the price of this of such a expression is quite high. This constraint is non-convex, and numerically, it's a bad idea. So unless you're very clever about how you deal with constraints like this, and use sort of very powerful computing tools, you're basically out of luck for problems of this kind. But so I think one of the researchers who's working on models of this type is Eva Lee, and she's going to give the talk tomorrow, I believe, about using mixed linear integer formulations. But we want to keep things simpler. Okay, so we don't like non-convex geometry. We want to keep things kind of nice geometric. Okay. So, and in our case, the number of this indicator variables is of order, let's say, tens of thousands. We have many voxels, many volume elements, so this problem is very, very difficult if we model it like this. So, well, one kind of a side remark, why are we so much after convexity? Well, in optimization, convexity means a lot. So here, let's say we minimize variable y over some convex set. So convex set means that together with two points, we can fit in a linear segment between these two points in the set. So this yellow area is the convex set. If we minimize y, well, you can just drop a point, and you know. So as long as you kind of roll down in this convex set, you're going to get to where you want. Problem with non-convexity is, however, if you found one such point, it doesn't mean it's the best point, right? So your curve can bounce up and down a few times, and you'll never, let's say, if you start here, it's very difficult to end up at this point. You have to climb up and then do something else. So it's kind of a pictorial illustration why we like convexity. Okay, so let's talk about first take at formulating such a model. Again, we're after finding a good plan. Okay, so I want to formulate it as an optimization model, well, because I do optimization for once. Okay. So let's say we're going to penalize ourselves for deviating from the ideal plan. Physician came in and says, I want to have these dose distributions. And I say, well, let's try to formulate some function which will be minimized at the point where I get the plan that physician asked for, right? So I'm going to penalize myself for deviating from this plan. So I'll say, I'll minimize the total penalty. Okay, and I'll come back to this part. But for now, I want to formulate a very simple model just to give you an idea what things look like. Okay, so what do we know? We know that dose is a linear combination of the beamlet weights, right? Your beamlets are negative. Also, you would like to say, well, let the dose to a tumor be squeezed between lower and upper bound, right? And for example, for healthy organs, I'm going to put some cap, which will guarantee that I don't kill this voxel at least one by one. So, so far there was nothing that would guarantee the shape of the curves, right, that I want to attain. Again, the curves are reconstructed by looking at the result in these. So I want to add some version of those volume constraints. Okay, so I'm emphasizing word version here because we will see what we can do here. One obvious alternative is this. Again, we spoke about it. Well, these things are non-convex. I mean, you face an enumeration problem of the order 2 to the 10,000. Okay, it's something you don't want to do. So we'll drop it. And let's say, well, first thing you can think of, let's just minimize the total dose to all the healthy stuff. So it's one such formulation, very simplistic, but this is something you can handle numerically. So we want to make this model more sophisticated, so we'll still talk about penalty term here, but we want to have more control. Okay? So again, we're focusing on the version of those volume constraints. I mean, this is one option. So this would be one option, of such a model, but it's very simple. Again, it gives us very little, if any, control over those distributions. So we want to do better in terms of our model, yet keep the convexity. Okay? So we're after this curves that are shaped in a particular fashion. So how do we do it? We're going to use the so-called generalized equivalent uniform dose parameters, which were introduced in medical physics for a particular reason. And one of the particular reasons GEDs were introduced is to control those distributions. And we're going to look at what these things give us. And we'll make extension of this GEDs to something more general. Okay. So again, recall we are after controlling curves, right? Like this resulting curves. And we want to ask this question nicely. We don't want to throw in binaries, non-convexity, and so on. Okay, so for us, nicely means convex. Okay, so what are these GEDs, generalized equivalent uniform dose? So GUD is just a value which is computed according to this formula. Okay, I'm keeping things quite simple. So typically, if you look at the literature, there is the eighth radical taken of this value, but I mean, we'll take it's a power sum of d to the a, right? Weighted power sum. So nice thing about this expression, if you just look at the right-hand side, well, this is convex function of D. So there is already some nice geometry. If you look at, let's say, you have only one voxel, A is equal to 2, you have a parabola. It has a convex hypergraph, right? The top of the parabola is convex, so we can minimize over this parabola in some sense, okay? So we will try to ask for a nice dose volume distribution using the GUD. And again, so this has been attempted in even in many clinical treatment planning systems, but the relationship between GUDs and DVHs was poorly understood. And we proposed the formal model and hopefully enhanced the modeling capacities of such an approach. Okay? So here is the main kind of motivating theorem or statement that served as the basis for this work. You can establish the following. So given a dose volume distribution, well, of course, you can compute these values, right? Nothing fancy here. But likewise, actually, if somebody comes in and tells you, well, GUD sub 1, so I had some curve, right? I computed the GUD sub 1, GUD sub 2, and so on. Somebody gave me a bunch of numbers. Actually, it turns out that the correspondence to DVH is unique as well. So there is no other dose volume distribution which will give you the same sequence of GUDs. And we'll try to sort of put our hands on the curve that we want using this GUD parameters. Okay, so how would we use the theorem again? Physician came in, let's say, said, I want to have this dose volume distribution. We say, okay, we compute this GUD numbers, right? Then I just reverse the arrows. I'm saying if I'll plug in into my optimization module or into our model constraints of this kind, I'm going to get the curve that I want back. Okay. So what was done in practice is people kind of guessed that this is a good idea, but typically one would use just one GUD parameter. And so here is the big difference. I mean, if you have infinitely many of them or just enough of them, then you have much better control of the dose volume distribution. So, well, one obvious problem with constraints like this, if I were to plug it into my optimization model, I'm asking for infinitely many inequalities to hold, right? So I'm having infinitely many constraints. Although possible, this poses a difficulty too. So I'll do again something very simple. I'll just look at first k GUD parameters. And actually what happens is that instead of a single dose volume distribution, now I'm going to have a whole family of distributions that live between this green curve and the red curve. But even, let's say, if I use first 10 A's, this family is very small. So things live close by. Okay. So by making this truncation, let's say, to my, in terms of the optimization model, I'll say I'll just add 10 more constraints. My problem is already on order of tens of thousands of constraints. So adding 10 more won't matter that much. But I maintain very good control over the dose distribution. Okay. And well, next step would be actually to look at this equality sign here. So if I'm going to say x squared is equal to 1, this is not a convex set, right? So x squared equal to 1 means x can be either 1 or minus 1. And there is no way I would say 0 satisfies x squared is equal to 1, right? So I need to relax this. I need to take care of this equality and just transform it into an equality to keep the convexity. So what happens to the family of distributions? The family spreads out, and this picture might look, let's say, somewhat alarming to the planner physician if I tell, well, I'm telling, you know, just use the 10 constraints and you get some distribution between this red and green curve. Okay. But actually what we will see in the case study that the picture is not that bad as it might seem at the first sight. Okay, so furthermore, instead of just dealing with d to the power a, we can generalize it. We can say, well, let it be just any convex function over those, right? As long as we do this, we keep the constraint convex. And examples of this, again, we can do just the power function here. We can deal with the so-called mean tail dose, which has been looked at in context of radiotherapy optimization and so on. But you can come up with other things which enhance your modeling capacity as well. Okay, so this is what we call GMC, so generalized moment constraints. Okay, so I'll spend for probably two slides on telling you, well, why we thought about this theorem in the first place, like why this statement sort of makes sense. Okay. So I want to spend a few minutes on telling what the GUDs are. Okay, so remember, GUD parameter of value A is just this weighted power sum, right? So it turns out this corresponds to a moment of some random variable that kind of lurks behind the dose per voxel. Okay, so we will shift our perspective. We'll say we'll treat the dose to any given voxel in a volume of interest as a random variable d. So what does it mean, random variable, mathematically? Well, if you look at the probability theory, I mean, there is nothing random about random variables. You just have a function that you don't know what it looks like. Right. So here, our function is the distribution of doses to each voxel, right? You plot voxel 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, till 100 on the horizontal axis, and you put the values of dV on the vertical axis. So this is a function, right? And it's a step function, but it is a function that, let's say, for a moment you don't know much about. So, well, if you look at this function, you can translate it into the language of probability and talk about random variables. Okay. So the way to do it is the following. We're going, let's say, our volume of interest consisted of 6 voxels. So this is voxel 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And this voxel got 10 grays, this one got 11 grays, this one got 12 grays, and so on. So I have V faceted die, right? Out of this, I just manufacture a game die, a fair die. And I'm on each of the face of this die, I'm going to just put this number. So 10 goes here, 11 goes here, 15 goes here, and so on. I just paint the sides of this die. And then, so I can play with this die, I mean, it will be a random outcome. So, and actually it will correspond to the setting of understanding the dose distributions. So the main point here is that the dose volume distribution of histogram is nothing but 1 minus the cumulative probability distribution of such a random variable. And once I make this connection, well, it's quite easy to see that, okay, my die was fair. What are the chances of seeing one side of this die? It's 1 over V. So these expressions are the first GUD is expected value, second the second moment, and so on. Right? So I'm dealing with the random variable here and its moments. Okay, and the question of understanding DVH subject to GUDs translates into understanding the cumulative distribution subject to the moments of a discrete random variable. And luckily, this problem has been looked at for quite a number of decades. Okay, so we just use the existing machinery now to tackle this. So how do you tackle this, and what do I mean to tackle this problem? Okay, so if you, I apologize for going back and forth, but I said, well, we get this envelope, then we jump to this envelope. So I mean, if I'm talking about approximating this curve, I'd rather I should be able to actually figure out what these envelopes are, how big they are. Right, and by saying, well, I'm going to tackle this problem using this machinery means I can compute this envelope numerically using this. Okay. So, I mean, formally, the problem of computing this envelope, right, green and red curve translates to maximizing some probability mass that's deposited on a compact subinterval of 0, 1 subject to moment constraints. And there is nice duality theory. I mean, if you doubt, well, so corresponding to this problem, you can write something like this, and actually this problem is easier to solve. Again, so you can evaluate this envelope, the size of your envelope numerically. And to do this, you need to find the extremum of this linear function subject to polynomial constraints. And there are several techniques you can do it. You can generalize this to the GMCs. And as of the numerical techniques, you can use, for example, the so-called semi-definite optimization, where you optimize, well, you minimize the linear functional subject to affine constraints and matrix X being positive definite. Again, if you did optimization, you probably have seen linear programming, so this is a linear generalization of linear programming, in a sense. Or you can use just LP relaxations. So this problem is not difficult. I mean, it's quite easy to find this envelope and understand things quantitatively. And in the case study, so I will show you kind of real-time analysis of this constraint. Okay. So now, well, let's see what kind of quality of approximation to the desired dose distribution we can get. Okay. So we're going to look, we're going to look at this prostate cancer patient, and the organ that we'll try to spare would be rectum. Okay. So this is the choice. So we have the DVH that the physician would usually prescribe. Based on this DVH, we're going to handpick 13 constraints of this type. And how you pick it, it's a different story, but I mean, you can play with MATLAB. Because the analysis of, once you have these constraints, to analyze them is very cheap. It takes 1 minute to compute everything. And then you can just look at things kind of picture by picture and pick the best ones, or try to pick the best ones. Okay. So, and once you pick such constraints, well, the purpose of this is you're going to plug these constraints in your radiotherapy optimization model. And this will keep things nice and convex, which will imply basically problem like this. Probably you can solve it on your desktop. Okay. So this is the use of such constraints. But so I want to show what happens if you look at what happens to those distributions subject to these constraints. Okay, so this is the way I want to do this is as follows. Well, I will normalize. So this is, the red one is the DVH I'm after. So I apologize for changing colors, but I'll go. Okay, I'll explain what the color annotation here. Okay, so this is the DVH we want to approximate. Okay. And what I did, I just scaled the dose to be equal to 1, right? It's some relative units, I divided it by 1. This is the percentage, okay? So, well, don't worry, again, so don't worry about how I got these blue curves. I got them, I'll explain how. Basically, the meaning of these curves is the following. Whatever the dose distribution you take, so whatever the collection of these you have, which might be a result of dose delivered with given intensities. as long as this collection of D satisfies this certain constraints, my dose distribution that I will get will never leave this envelope between two curves. So everything will live between these two guys, okay, between these two blue curves. So as I said, I mean, to a planner or a physician, well, this would look alarming if I say, I guarantee you, if you run my model, you're going to get some dose distribution which lives between these two. Okay, so one might say, well, do you have anything that will crawl along this kind of extreme curve? So this curve, and it lets your organ receive the highest dose possible, basically. And if there is a distribution which will crawl on here, I mean, then it's not good, okay? You don't want to have a model like this, because the discrepancy between the thing you're after and this boundary is quite large, and it's sort of significantly, well, it's clinically meaningful. You don't want to crawl along this boundary, okay? But what happens is the following, that actually, because of the nature of these constraints, if you were to escalate a dose in some region, in the lower dose region, then you have to compensate for it with the sharp drop of the dose at the high dose energy region, okay? So to illustrate this, I'm going to explain actually how I got these curves, okay? So I'm going to phrase a very simple question. I'm going to say, well, I'm going to fix the energy threshold somewhere here. Okay, so let's say I'll pick my first, I'm going to pick the energy threshold close to zero. Let's say 1% of the maximum dose. And I'm going to ask the following question. What is the maximum volume that can receive dose equal to the threshold value? So I fix the energy again, energy deposited to an organ, and I said, what's the largest volume that may receive it, right? So a question like this can be answered, and well, there will be a candidate solution. There will be a dose distribution which will actually deliver this maximum volume at a given dose threshold, okay? And well, besides being a candidate answer, actually these distributions are far, well, in our belief is that these distributions are far more meaningful than this whole envelope. Because the distributions really tell you the worst thing that might happen. Okay? So what we need to do is we need to focus on these distributions. And then you attain this envelope as sort of a union of these distributions. But the distributions are actually the things that you will see once you run this optimization over this set of constraints. Okay? And again, so here I'm not building any knowledge about the geometry of the problem, about how dose is computed and so on. So in fact, this envelope will be thinner once you plug it in into your optimization engine. Okay? So I'm going to go through a few values of the energy threshold. So here the point is that, well, this actual dose distribution is pretty close to what I want to achieve, right? This curve. Well, again, I mean, I'm talking about proximity of two curves in very vague terms, but visually, well, it sort of looks alike. Okay, that's what matters. So next, I'm going to move my threshold a bit farther. Again, so this picture is okay. We are pretty close, okay? Let's say what happens here. Okay, so I moved my energy threshold to 50% of the max dose, and I ask my black box, which spits out these values, what's the largest percentage of the volume? So the answer is 100%. Okay, but the thing to notice here is that this DVH actually, so I escalated the volume of the organ that receives 50%, but what I got in return, yeah, I got 100% here, but what I got in return is no dose at all at the higher energy, right? So this means you irradiate your organ at 50% of the max dose, but there is nothing else. There is nobody higher. And actually, if you think about this picture from a treatment planning perspective, I mean, something like this is not going to happen, period, because of the geometry of the beams. Okay. So some of these extreme distributions just cannot happen physically. So consequently, you don't need to worry about things like this. Okay. So I'm going to go further again. Another picture is I ask what's the largest percentage of the volume that can receive the dose up here. The answer is it's, let's say, close to 45%, but then my dose is sort of a step function, so I'm hitting 50% with the low dose, then another half of the organ with the higher dose. Right, so it means that there is one beam that goes through the full organ, and there is another one that cuts off half of it. So geometrically or physically, it cannot happen just because of the arrangements of the beams and so on. So one thing to note here, that so this concept of kind of compensating, even if the dose is escalated at the low region, it has to be compensated at the drop at the higher region of the dose. So this is the kind of takeaway of this story. Okay. So, well, let me run. So I want to run this kind of online analysis. I want to show a bit more of this extreme distributions and just show you how long it takes. I mean, this is kind of a modest laptop machine. So I'm going to run this analysis. I started, I said, well, here's the curve I want to achieve, what can you, how far can I be, right? So I'm going through this sequence of questions and answers, how far can you be at this energy threshold, and that's it. Okay, so in here, again, this is a familiar picture, again, I changed the colors, but now we're after this blue curve over here, right? And I'll just go through this evolution of the dose distributions, right? So you can get quite a comprehensive picture of what's the worst things that might happen to you. And you can actually eliminate some of this because say, well, this physically is not going to happen because of the beam orientation and so on. So, I mean, we think that there is a nice way to analyze it, and it's actually quite cheap in terms of the time investment. Okay, so one thing about this approach that, let's say, well, tentatively, all you need to do is manufacture the set of sort of best constraints for every given volume of interest. Let's say you take a liver, you know the DVH you want to get for liver, you just need to go through this analysis once and then use the set of constraints as just a plug-in module for optimization for several patients. Okay. All right. So my conclusion to this again is very simple. Well, what we think is that this generalized moment constraints approach is good, and the earlier binary variable approach is bad. That's it. And for now, well, I'm pretty sure we can claim this from computational point of view. Well, because one, that GMCs are cheap and DVHs are very expensive. But we hope that you can actually bring some clinical significance to this too, that you can use this model in with GMCs in actual radiotherapy optimization. So, thank you.